Welcome to Establish the Edge. I'm your host, Mike Leone, here with Adam Rausch. We're back for week two of the GPP game scores. We had this podcast last week. We'll have it again this week. For those that might be new to this series, the GPP game scores is something that Adam developed to help us kind of quickly look at one number to figure out which game to stack. Now, obviously, it's a lot more nuanced than that, which is why we go into it in this show. But these numbers that you see on the screen, if you're watching on the YouTube channel, they're all relative to one another. So right now, KC Jacksonville has the highest game score of the week at 2.4. Nobody else is higher than 1.1 on DraftKings. That's just relative to this week, and it takes into account the ownership, the game total, our ceiling projections, our value, the salaries of the players. Specifically, it's looking at the top eight players in each game as by ETR projected value, whether it's DraftKings or FanDuel. Some pros and cons to it, like if a game is real deep, like there's just a lot of fantasy points to go around and it can possibly condense under the right guys. Sometimes there are games that don't rate well because there's like might be a really good double stack with a bring back, but then everybody else kind of stinks and the table will not look as favorably upon those things. But Adam, before diving into week two stuff, let's do a quick recap of week one. And, you know, as we had talked about, it was a good late swap week where if you started contrarian early, you could have gotten onto this Chargers Miami game that was heavily owned, but turned out to be the best game to stack by far on a really, really ugly week one. This game being 36-34 really outshined the rest. But it was, you know, tough from ownership standpoint heading into the game where we knew it was going to be chalky, ended up chalky, and the chalk absolutely got there.
Yeah, it's you never want the chart to look too linear. And a lot of the games on week one really failed. But, you know, when you have the highest owned game being the top scoring game as well, you know, that's when the chalk hits. And it's that's just the way it's going to go sometimes. It's the most owned game for a reason. You had to be on Tua and Tyreek. They were in 11% of top 1% lineups in the slant. Two of Tyreek Eckler stacks were in 2.5% of that top 1%. I will say I do want to give a little bit of love to the Colts Jags game. Did offer a more affordable stack at less ownership. They did get you some points. I saw there were a couple of lineups that finished in the top 1% in the slant using like a Richardson Pittman Ridley stack, which was pretty low owned. So I do want to give a little bit of shine to that game, but yeah, otherwise kind of a disappointing week one.
Yeah, I had a tough time with the Jacksonville one where I thought Ridley was going to get steamed and he kind of got like light steam where I think he was still probably a good play at like that high teens ownership. I was worried he might get steamed even more. I know some of my real small field stuff, Mike Williams got steamed. So when I see that on players, I really do want it to be kind of a part of the stack. So I kind of only had Ridley with the doubles for Lawrence. And unfortunately, my boy Christian Kirk, can't really talk about him too much, but he let me down in a big way. Looking at game one, though, I do think like it is a little bit of a bounce back spot for him. And he's in this game that is tops on FanDuel and DraftKings for us. It's the Kansas City Jacksonville game. Not a huge surprise here, Adam. It's the highest total on the slate at 51, and it could be a real pass heavy game. I know, you know, the tough part with Jacksonville for me week one was they ran more than I expected them to run. And as a result, they played more two wide receiver sets and Kirk's not playing those. So that was really bad for Kirk. But additionally, we saw that Travis Etienne was receiving a lot more out of the backfield than he did last year. And then it starts to get more muddied if you add like an alpha receiver with Ridley and then you add in some more running back targets. I think Zay Jones and Kirk are going to be kind of a headache and they're going to yo-yo kind of over the course of the season. But what are you seeing with this Kansas City Jacksonville game?
Just what you are. I mean, the Jags, even despite their kind of their great offensive performance against Indy, they're projecting for mostly modest ownership. Calvin Ridley, like I said, I mean, he's a top value, one of the top values on at wide receiver, but he's still 7,200 on DraftKings. And yeah, like you said, it just, I think the biggest issue with this game or the biggest challenge more so on kind of both sides is if you're going to stack, you know, if you're going to include Ridley or Kelsey on a game stack, who are you pairing them with? I mean, it's kind of muddied on the Jacksonville side with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk, or do you just venture away from receivers and play Etienne, or do you mix in Ingram here? And on Kansas City, it's even worse because you've got Kelsey, but then you've got Sky Moore, Rashee Rice, Marquez Valdes-Scantling. I mean, I'm sure I'm missing another guy in there. I mean, there's just so many options to play. I guess the positive, if you want to kind of lean into these kind of grow more, a little like more muddled wide receiver plays, is that you're going to be able to afford them because they're less expensive. I guess that's one benefit to it. But yeah, it's just trying to figure out like where, how to construct your stack is a bit of a crapshoot when it comes to stuff like this.
Yeah, I do think like if you're playing the game stack, you do probably have to gamble on those cheap wide receivers, one, to make the lineup fit. And then at that point, you want to take the correlation. And because it's muddied, it's going to be frustrating in the sense that you might guess the wrong player to use, but you should get the ownership payoff, especially like the Kansas City side. Like, you know, Kadarius Toney, Sky Moore, I think they're more large field tournament plays. Generally, when we have guys like as bad values relative to their salary, like I'm not forcing them even in stacks and small field, but in tournaments where it's like we're spreading things out because there's so much role uncertainty, but they're cheap enough that they can get there. I am like just torturously like tempted to run it back with Kirk just because I think that people aren't going to play him after last week. And I'm hopeful that in a game where Jacksonville has to throw more, they play more 11 personnel, which means he's not hurt as much by not playing two wide receiver sets. And I do think he's going to be a higher target per route run guy in those formations than Zay Jones is going to be. But we'll see. A lot of this for me depends on two things. Like if Kelsey's confirmed in, it's possible our ownership on that comes up a decent bit. Right now, you know, it's always tough to do these projections and the game scores in particular, because not the whole market's not necessarily assuming the same thing. I'm also really curious, Adam, to see like if people balk at the price increase for Ridley, or if they're just like, this price increase wasn't enough, we're going right back to him. And I know our projections kind of assume the latter, that you should really be going back to Ridley at this price point. So we'll see. Like at 13%, he would be an amazing play. He gets up to like 25 plus. It's a little more worrisome.
Yeah, he's still a great value. And just one more, I mean, we're kind of going back to those Zay Jones, Christian Kirk thing. Their ceilings are virtually identical. So I'm also kind of tempted to run it back with him. I kind of feel like I am obligated to. I have so many shares of him. I got to give him another shot. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see.
Let's go to another game. We'll skip Baltimore-Cincinnati for a second, which is kind of tied for second with Seattle-Detroit. That's narrowly behind, but that's the second highest total game. I'll talk about this game. This was a tough one last year. And we talked about that scatter plot looking linear. Last year, this game was where the Chargers-Miami game was, way in the upper right. It got steamed to all heavens last year. We were joking about Rashad Penny before the show. He ended up being like one of the highest owned running backs on the slate in small field tournaments when he was supposed to be a contrarian play for the week. And then Hockenson had like probably his best game as a Lion before, you know, he got moved, and just everyone who could hit in this game hit. So people in DFS remember that. I'm worried there might be some outsized ownership in this game that we're not yet taking into account just because of how nutty the game went last year. But it isn't, you know, it's a high total, second highest, but it's in line with, you know, Chargers, Tennessee, Vegas, Buffalo, Baltimore, Cincy. So it wasn't like totally out there. But yeah, just to set the stage, is this game going to go nuclear again, Adam?
Oh, I hope so, because I really want to play it. I do kind of worry about ownership getting steamed up a little bit here. You know, it's interesting. This slate compared to last slate is kind of flipped, where last week's slate, we had kind of the more appealing games all in the afternoon slate, which is more typical. This week, like pretty much any game I'm interested in stacking are all on the early slate, and the afternoon game slates kind of suck. So this is just like another example of one of those games. Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf are looking real low owned right now. And they're not horrible values either. It's a little intriguing to me. I do think this game has a lot of stack appeal because it's pretty easy to stack with Geno and Jared Goff, even though they're not like the elite ceiling plays at QB. Like, it just to be able to build around them is a lot easier than trying to build around someone like Mahomes or Lamar Jackson or Joe Burrow. So that's kind of what intrigues me the most about this game. But yeah, we have a little bit of projected high ownership already on the Detroit side. Amon-Ra getting close to 20%. Josh Reynolds at 3,700, you know, could be played more than what we have him at right now, even though he's only at 10. I think that could go up at his lower price tag. So I'm still interested in the game, though. A lot of the average ownership is being soaked up by David Montgomery, who's projecting for chalk right now. So I still kind of like the idea of playing around a Lockett Metcalf build to kind of keep the ownership down. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that as well. I definitely think if you're going to play it, you want to play it from the Seattle side with some Geno doubles and bring it back. And again, so how much this game, if I recall correctly, I think optimal or winning lineups had like six players from this game last year. So just want to note, especially in small field, there's some merit, and we're seeing this with the new Solver Sims product that we've put out, like to just, if you think a game goes off, you can onslaught it more than you think in a smaller field tournament where you don't have to be perfect. I don't know if that's quite the case this week, but like, yeah, Seattle, I'd even throw Jaxon Smith-Njigba on FanDuel where the spreads on the salaries are a little bit wider. JSN at 5,200 is pretty appealing, and I don't think people are going to play him. And I kind of like mixing him in as well. It could be a situation too, if you're MMEing, where I could see you being pretty heavy and just sort of rotating your Seattle stacks and what happens there. The Detroit side's definitely trickier, as you mentioned, because it carries ownership on the main guys, which is going to be Montgomery in particular and Amon-Ra. I do think, you know, playing this game through Gibbs is kind of interesting. You're going to get a lot less workload than you're going to get through Montgomery, but you're going to get some explosive plays and you're going to get less ownership. But man, it is a tough click on DraftKings to pay an extra $500 for the guy you know is going to get, you know, half the touches as the other guy. So
I will say, though, I mean, are we wrong in thinking that if Jahmyr Gibbs does get less work, but he would be more valuable on DraftKings if he gets more passing game work as opposed to Montgomery?
Yeah, it's hard. He's definitely more valuable on DraftKings for the scoring, but then for the salary stuff, he's $500 cheaper than Montgomery on FanDuel, right, as far as more expensive. And at 5,800, he's pretty cheap, but we actually have him with ownership on FanDuel because of that. So it's definitely this circle. I'll also throw out the, you know, the rookie tight end, Sam Laporta, who played a bunch. Generally, you know, tight end's a good spot to correlate if you're stuck. I could segue that into my boy Dalton Kincaid, but let's go to Baltimore, Cincinnati next and kind of keep this in order. And this is a game where you're hoping two passing offenses sort of bounce back. You know, we saw the Bengals get destroyed week one, and we also saw the Ravens. You know, they handled Houston, but the three touchdowns, of course, come on the ground with Dobbins for one before he got hurt and Justice Hill for two. Passing game seemed a little lackluster. We didn't see the full Monken effect for Baltimore. I think this week we're going to see it a bit more, be forced to see it in this in-game environment. But Andrews is coming back. The price tags on the pass catchers are tough on FanDuel. So like, I'm almost into more just playing the Cincinnati side where I think the correlations are a bit cleaner. You can double and bring it back with a Baltimore rather than playing like a Lamar skinny. That's where I'm at right now. But Andrews on DK is pretty intriguing if he does play. And he's kind of like Kelsey, though, where I think our projected ownership now is probably low because the market's making different types of assumptions on him.
Right. Yeah, I would expect it to come up, but I think there is still some appeal about maybe paying up at tight end this week in a stack, whether that's Kelce or Andrews, if you can make it work. Like, but it is going to be kind of hard with the pricing on this game. That's kind of the one thing that's holding it back a little bit, is if you want to go full game stack with the elite ceiling plays, it's just really tough to fit them. At the same time, we're getting a lot of good ceiling in the game, which is why the game score is higher on the table. You know, you talked about playing that Cincinnati stack right now. Jamar Chase is, we're projecting as a little chalky at over 20% on DK at least. But this could be a good week to come back with a to fit in T. Higgins, who we're projecting for less ownership. And obviously he's a more affordable play. But yeah, it's going to be a little bit difficult to kind of onslaught this game. I feel like trying to find the right mini game stack or correlation may be the way to go just due to the pricing. But the Bengals are getting a lot of good value on their side as well. Baltimore is not. So the Burrow stacks seem like the way that I feel like I would go in this one, just because it's a little bit tougher to build around Lamar at his price. But we're like we talked about, we're getting a lot of good ceiling here, and we kind of know how the stacks are going to condense a little bit, especially on Cincinnati's side. But on Baltimore, we're kind of seeing this connection with Lamar and Zay Flowers, and Andrews if he comes back. So at least we kind of know who we can pinpoint.
Yeah. Let's look at the Chargers-Tennessee game, showing as a pretty good game to target right now. The Eckler status is going to affect this a decent bit, where we're going to lose a very good player from this game, but at the same time, we could gain a lot of value in his backup in Josh Kelly, and then also just helps the target share for the receivers and maybe kind of, you know, affects the pass run ratio for the Chargers. I already know that Tennessee's a big pass funnel. We saw last week how they shut down. I mean, Jamal Williams is not an efficient rusher, but just picked up where they left off last year in terms of limiting the yards per carry for the opponent. So I do think the Chargers were a bit game plan specific week one, where they ran a lot more than we expected. So this one's interesting to me if people are off it. We also have, you know, always injury news, but DeAndre Hopkins could be out here for Tennessee, which would make some appealing bringbacks, whether it's going to be Okonkwo and Burks as value pass catchers. But I also think, you know, Henry could get overlooked this week, a little bit no man's land, where the Chargers are the opposite of Tennessee. They're a run funnel, right? Like, they kind of dare you to run the ball. They don't want you to throw, kind of that analytics mindset of limiting explosive plays. And we could see, if Henry breaks off a long run, we've just seen how that totally jump starts games. So this one's pretty appealing to me at the moment.
Yeah, I like your point there about Derrick Henry, because when he hits, you know, he gets these huge chunk plays and long touchdown runs, which helps speed up the game as well, which is what we want. And the Chargers being a run funnel defense certainly helps. On the passing side of things, I do think Treylon Burks, even with Hopkins, even if Hopkins does play, I think he still has a little bit of appeal as a more affordable play at receiver. But I really am kind of digging these Herbert stacks again. You can fit Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and Justin Herbert in a stack pretty well at low ownership, even though they're not amazing values right now. But a lot of that's going to change if Eckler is declared out. I think we'll see kind of those adjustments come to fruition there. I think this game was at first, when I kind of looked at it, I thought I was going to be a little down on it, but for not necessarily projections reasons, but for football reasons, how the defenses and offenses interact with each other, it's kind of given me some renewed hope. Even though it's not the highest ceiling on the slate, it's not the highest total on the slate, but there's a reason that it's still up there on the table, and I think it's for good reason.
Yep. And then the last sort of, I guess not the last game, there's two more games with these team totals or game totals of 45 or higher before it really drops down to basically like around 40 for everybody else. There's San Fran at the Rams, which game scores doesn't like too much, kind of has it in the middle. I do think, you know, we're going to watch Puka Nacua, and he was a DMP in practice. He was the hot waiver wire pickup after week one. If he plays, there's going to be kind of like Ridley light in terms of the price increase, but did it increase enough and how much do people change it? So not comparing them as talents, but just in terms of like how the market's going to react to like a player that was clearly underpriced week one, and whether or not that change is enough. And you're definitely going to need some pushback from the Rams on this game. But if you do, San Francisco had a pretty neutral pass rate over expectation week one, and Purdy looked really good. So I do think there's some sneaky upside, but going to keep an eye on Puka. But the Buffalo Las Vegas game has a little bit higher total. If people are scared off Buffalo and they kind of see the big spread and they don't think they're going to throw enough, I am interested in some Allen doubles. Going to be tracking that, but I expect it to be a bounce back. You know, really high team total for them. Allen is our highest projected quarterback on the main slate, and you've got guys that you can go to. I'm into the, you know, rookie tight end Dalton Kincaid. I think our projection is a little light on him right now. He's basically playing as a full-time slot wide receiver at tight end. And I know the production wasn't there week one, but saw something that he ran like tied for the most routes ever for a week one rookie tight end the last 10 years or something. So I'm pretty into making Kincaid work in some way with Allen, and then maybe just the chalky digs alongside that.
Yeah, and we kind of saw from last week, chalky receivers aren't the worst. I mean, hey, if there's any game that kind of resembles Chargers-Dolphins from last week, I think it's this one, where we have the combination of high ceiling potential on the receiving end with Diggs and Davante Adams, and then ceiling quarterback potential with Josh Allen. But we're also going to have ownership with it. Again, I think if you can build around that stack the right way, it's definitely one to look at, and a great way to kind of make it work is by playing Dalton Kincaid, like you alluded to. I'm kind of curious what you think about our boy Gabe Davis. It seems like another guy that I just kind of fall into this trap with every single week when trying to stack Buffalo. He's not a great value at all, but it doesn't look like he's going to be owned very much, if at all.
Yeah, I love it on FanDuel, right, where I think the scoring system fits him better, where he's more reliant on touchdowns, big plays, than he is on volume, maybe not going to get the bonus, not going to rack up a ton of catches. You know, some of this cover two stuff that we've been talking about with the NFL, I think is obviously very real in terms of limiting the big plays, and it's affecting Buffalo. But I also think there's a tendency that after it works really well for a week, to kind of overrate exactly its impact. So I don't think Gabe's upside is dead by any means. He's running 96% of the routes, more routes than even Diggs ran last week. He's going to be out there. Yeah, I'm absolutely playing him on FanDuel at low ownership. I'm going to make sure I get in a team over on FanDuel this week. And Gabe is, I think that's the spot to use him. I have a tougher time doing it on DraftKings, where he's, you know, relative to the median salary of wide receivers, he's more expensive and the scoring's worse for him. So it's like, he goes 3 for 80 with a touchdown on DraftKings, it's an okay day, right? It's not, but if he does that on FanDuel, you know, it's a really good day. So I like him more there. Let's look at, I think those are the main games to target, because all 45 total and higher do have this Indy Houston game in the middle, despite a 39 total, the battle of the rookie quarterbacks here with Stroud versus Richardson. Did just want to point out there, Adam, for both teams, the pace was really good week one. They trusted their quarterbacks to throw the ball more than we kind of anticipated the rookie quarterbacks doing out of the gate. That's good. I like Nico Collins. He had a ton of air yard, ton of opportunity for Houston. Pittman had a huge target share for the Colts, and Richardson was completing passes at a higher rate than we expected. So, like, there's a little bit of juice in that game. I don't know if there's enough to game stack it necessarily, but I think it's worth pointing out, because I think I don't think anyone's going to stack a 39 total game, but I do actually see like a little bit of upside there.
It really is going to depend on, I think it's going to depend on game scripts. Last week, Houston was trailing pretty much the entire game versus Baltimore, and we're kind of forced into a pass-heavy, up-tempo game script. In a game at home against Indy, I would like to think that they would try to establish more of a run-heavy game plan with Damian Pierce as the focal point. But if they run into a situation where they have to go more up-tempo again, they're trailing because Richardson gets off to a hot start. I mean, yeah, I mean, we saw Richardson carry a stack last week, even though he wasn't the top performing quarterback. It kind of got overshadowed by Tua and Tyreek, but he did pretty well for himself. So did Michael Pittman. And Pittman has kind of historically done pretty well against the Texans. So, yeah, I think if you're looking at kind of a lower total game, that's an intriguing one, but will be pretty dependent on game script.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, if you play that game, I'm definitely playing Nico. I think he's the big play guy that you need to make this game go. And if you get the big play from him, I dirt planted him last week. He had the opportunity, didn't come through, and we saw the game kind of dud out with them not hitting on those chances. Unlike last week, there's not really too much at the bottom of the table, Adam, that I'm interested in. I know last week I had some games where I was like, I like this, you know, despite the fact that it rates well, but I don't have any kind of interest below San Fran and Rams as far as game stacks. Do you have any interest in those bottom five games?
No, not as like full games. I'm a little intrigued by Daniel Jones in the Arizona game, but not enough to like full on game stack it. I just think he's an interesting play in the afternoon.
Cool. Well, that brings us to dirt plants.
You want to lead off this week?
You did better than me last week with Michael Thomas. You know, unfortunately, New Orleans didn't quite get there, but Michael Thomas performed well. I had Nico, who had the opportunity, but I didn't make the most of it. I kind of like him again this week, but I don't like that game enough to dirt planet. I'll go Kincaid because he doesn't rate as a very good value. So I think he still qualifies as a dirt plant, but I think he helps make that Buffalo game work. And he's going to be someone that, I'm trying to get into my lineups this week.
I will kind of go back to that Detroit-Seattle game, even though it's not a gross game by any means, but I still think people are not going to want to play Jared Goff. And I think it could be a Jared Goff spot this week. And as a gross play, I think he could maybe find a way into being a top QB scorer if that game goes the way that we want it to. So I'll go Jared Goff.
Oh, okay. All right. There you have it. Kincaid, Goff for the dirt plants. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Adam will have his write-up on site on Friday. We're recording this Friday morning, so you should see that by the end of the day. Appreciate everybody tuning in, and best of luck in week 2.